It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Who's Number One podcast, the belly of the beast, the den of the Illuminati, the, how's that go? The official headquarters of the International Crime Syndicate, right? Mm-hmm. I am not Hollywood Mike, Corey Stockton here with you with Chase Smith. Chase, what's going on?
What's up, dude? It's a weird place to be in here these days. When I left the Who's Number One podcast, it was kind of your run-of-the-mill, this is what happened last weekend. Now I'm in, as you said, the den of the Illuminati. So it feels good. Man, great to be back.
Yeah, we got Connor Joshen in the back manning the YouTube chat, the Discord, if you guys want to join in the conversation. Talk to us on Discord. Connor, anybody? Let's get a roll call. Who's in there?
Yeah, O Steve has joined us in the Discord. I'm not seeing anyone in the YouTube chat, but I think that's on my end. I'm messing things up. So, yeah, we're excited. This is my third cup of coffee for the day, so let's hype it up. I know we got no Hollywood mic, but we can, like, smack ourselves awake a little bit, you know?
Are you using that espresso machine? I just got the tutorial on that thing, and it is incredible. I'm making Americanos now on the fly.
Yeah, really?
I've been jacked up on espresso since we got it. We got it an espresso machine in-house here, and I think just in time for Mike Sears to quit the caffeine, right? Because I think that might have killed him.
It is idiot-proof, I will say. You just literally put the thing in the grinder, does it, then it tamps it for you, and then, yeah, you hit three buttons and you have espresso.
I know they say it's idiot-proof, but it intimidates me still. I'm sticking to the Keurig, and I really am against Keurig coffee, but I'm sticking to it.
We got something important to talk about, right?
Yep.
So normally, and oh, Steve, don't ban me for this, we are not allowed to talk about belts on this show typically. We got to make an exception today, I think. Somebody very important to this show received a very important promotion. What was it, last week at this point, right? It was on Friday. It was the day of Road to ADCC. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I think we got to give Mike Sears a shout out. Let's watch him get his black belt. Obviously got it from Carlson Gracie, right, which is a huge achievement. That's not a black belt that just anybody can get.
Oh, yeah, it's super cool, man. Michael went white to black under that lineage. Obviously, he's been here in Texas and also lived for a stint in Brazil and was training throughout that period, but always sort of had his association there with Carlson Gracie Jr. It's nice to see him. I actually don't know how long Michael's been training. I need to ask him that. It's been a long – if you include his wrestling career – through high school, I believe. I mean, you have at least over a decade, maybe 15 years, but not sure how long. You guys know how long he's been doing jiu-jitsu for?
So this footage is actually from a little documentary that Heath Pedigo and crew shot, and mm-hmm. they did a little interview with Carlson. Carlson said that Mike Sears joined him around 2012, so he's been at least 9 years there, but I imagine a lot longer given all of his time before that.
Yeah, well, I believe he was at a Carlson affiliate, right?
Right.
So he's always been under that banner. But, yeah, okay, that makes sense. 2012 for the actual HQ.
And if you guys want to see this footage, it's actually a really good documentary. There's there's an interview with Mike Sears' mom. And, of course, with Heath, with Carlson. So
some kids' photos, too. If you want to see what Hollywood Mike looked like before the corruption of L.A., then you can check that out there in that documentary. Really cool that the Daisy Fresh guys in Georgia are putting those out. Great evolution of his skill set, right? He's vlogging all the time these days, and that's what people need to do, by the way. Just
absolutely.
If you want to get out there, make your own media and just get better and better, it'll pay dividends.
Yeah, their YouTube channel is really picking up. It gives you some more behind-the-scenes look. In between, you know, you watch it in between Daisy Fresh episodes, and you get a really good glimpse onto what else is going on. Connor, what's going on in the back?
Yeah, man, everyone's there. They're here. Ricardo's in the chat. Steve is obviously holding it down. We got Becerra and Kit, man. Everyone's here. But yeah, everyone in the chat, go check out Daisy Fresh's YouTube. They're doing all the kind of in-between content that you'll want between episodes. Like, it's all stacked in there. You get to see it. And shout out Hollywood Mike. I know everyone in the comments has been wondering if Hollywood Mike actually, like, trains. And so, turns out he's a black belt, guys. He knows what he's talking about. So put some respect on his name.
That's right. That's right.
Josh Jitsu saying, Professor Hollywood, it's got a nice ring.
I love it. I do love it. I'm also terrified. But.
I'm kind of upset that he didn't wear those shades into the black belt promotion. But I get it. I get it. Michael Sears was being promoted, not Hollywood Mike per se.
We got a lot to talk about, right? Obviously, road to ADCC this past weekend. Six, what I think were wild mashups, 20 minute time limit each. I think we should start with the main event, yeah?
Let's get into it. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. I know we have some clips. I don't know if you want to queue up now or we can get it going. But the main event, it'll be a short clip because Kynan really made efficient work of Mateus Denise. An incredible achievement when you think about that. Mateus Denise is a reigning ADCC champ. And this is a rule set that he thrives in, and kind of was able to just take him out pretty quickly, Corey.
Yeah, his pressure from the top, that first snapdown he opened up with, I think really set the tone in kind of saying, nope, this is my match, you're just here. This foot sweep he hit was, you know, I said this a couple days ago, but it really felt, watching it, like it was a much longer match. And then when the match was over, I looked at the clock and it said 2 minutes. I was absolutely alarmed.
See, I had a totally different experience because when you're in the call, you're kind of in the zone, and I felt it went by so fast. I mean, once it got to the ground, we knew Mateus didn't want to be here, right? The last place Mateus Denise wanted to be was on his back, so I was really, really curious what was going to happen next. And for Kynan, to drop back on a leg, I was just like so interested. I'm like, this is such an evolution of his game. Of course, we learned earlier in the week that he has committed the last 5 months to exclusively training no-gi, and then afterwards says he's chasing the number one pound-for-pound spot, a.k.a. looking at Gordon.
Right.
That is awesome. What did you guys think about that call-out?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm actually working up an article about this right now, but the evolution of Kynan Duarte, since if we look back at his 2019 career, right, he won just about everything there was to win. Right? He won ADCC, he won Spider, he had a world gold medal. There were a lot of really impressive performances that he made, but he still had a ways to go, right, because in 2018 he lost to Gordon Ryan via submission at No Gi Pants. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The leaps and bounds he's made since ADCC 2019, he's 18-1. His only loss was to Roberto Cyborg Abreu. That was by heel hook, and now he's working his heel hooks too.
Yeah. I mean, the sky's the limit for Kynan. I really think he has set himself to be one of the most dominant athletes ever because he's still so young and is great in both formats, traditional Gi competition as well as any kind of submission grappling event. And I really hope we get to see him in the absolute of the ADCC division next year at Worlds. And it's a potential match. I don't know who is a tough challenger for Kynan right now. I'd love to see Craig a rematch, right? Because Kynan already submitted Craig a couple years ago, Kasai. But Craig has, of course, improved his game dramatically. That was before he was with the EDS. And now you can put him, I think, against his old self, and it would be a totally different game.
For sure.
But
you can say the same about Kynan, too, though,
that's
right?
That's true. They keep evolving. So it's tough to pick a difficult match for Kynan. I feel like he really is number one, number two in the world right now.
One thing I want to shout out, too, because I thought this was really impressive. Kynan's only been, you know, a black belt since 2018. He recorded his 100th career win against Mateus Denise.
Wow.
So in
at black belt?
Yeah, at black belt.
Jeez.
So and we're looking at less than 3 years, right? Because he got promoted on the podium at Worlds in 2018.
Man, that's something.
I would like to insert a little bit of really bad jiu-jitsu math, because you got to
at
some point. But let's compare, like, Kynan got it done against Mateus Denise so quickly. Gordon, under the same rule set, I don't know if maybe it was a strategy thing of him dragging it out. Maybe there was, like, a technical mismatch. But, you know, people like to compare Gordon and Kynan, and we see it all the time in the comments section. There's a lot of confidence behind Gordon being like just miles ahead of everyone. But, you know, if you use Mateus Denise as the milestone, that isn't particularly the case, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it's I get entirely what you're saying, because it does, on paper, it looks like, okay, Gordon took 17 and a half minutes to tap Mateus. Kynan took 2 minutes and 4 seconds is Tat Mateus. It doesn't necessarily show that one is better than the other, but it does give us a really good vantage point onto how they play their games, right? Kynan's very explosive. If he has an opening, he takes it. Gordon really likes to play this kind of boa constrictor game and just, you know, work his way up rather than work his way down, I think, the way Kynan plays. But really good insight into maybe what to expect if they ever run back into each other, which I think everybody's hoping for.
Absolutely. You know, Gordon's made some stipulations about whether or not that might happen, and I hope that those loosen up a little bit, right? I think we all want to see that match. That's the match the fans are calling for. But, of course, Gordon's career at the moment is very much up in the air. He's hopefully going to come back, and we would all appreciate that. But you never know. I mean, it's all up to how his medical situation goes.
Yeah, of course. Speaking of Ryan brothers and their medical situations, right? The co-main event, Nicky Ryan looked absolutely phenomenal against Dante Leon right up until and even after he injured his knee.
Yeah. I think we have a clip here as well for that match with Nicky Ryan and Dante Leon. But absolutely, you know, one thing that came out on the broadcast was with Gordon there, we asked him, is this the Nicky Ryan in the gym? Because every pre-event promotional period interviews we hear, Nicky Ryan is the toughest guy in the gym for me. He is the fiercest competitor and has basically untapped potential. And each passing event where he has taken home a win, it still hasn't quite met, I think, those expectations that we've been hearing about. I think we saw that, or at least a glimpse of it, at the Road to ADCC.
Yeah, and Nicky's always been critical of his performances up until this match against Dante, where he even limping off the mat, said that he was very pleased with his performance. And I think it's because, I think he acknowledged that it's because he got to show us what we so often expect to see from him, given the way that Craig Jones and Gordon Ryan and the entire DDS and Nicky Ryan himself hypes him up as the, you know, the toughest guy in the room in Puerto Rico at DDS, right? I've been very critical of Nicky, saying that I wanted to see more from him. I've been expecting to see more from him, and I really think that all of that work paid off, especially against a guy like Dante, who Dante doesn't get beat up like that.
No, and we saw basically what Dante's A game is executed by Nicky, the wrestling up style. And I was still blown away at how clean those takedowns were, right? I mean, he was so deep under the hips on one go. And there was no shot, defend, reshot. It was, boom, I'm coming up and I'm taking you down right now. Really, really impressive stuff. And then, of course, when Nicky was able to secure the takedown and put Dante on his back, the passing sequences that Nicky initiated with the body lock stuff was really, really effective, really shut Dante down in ways I did not expect at all. And a little bit of inside info here. We had Gordon Ryan drop by the office Monday this week after the event. He did some breakdowns, and he will be breaking down and analyzing Nicky's passing game. So that should be pretty interesting and coming very soon.
One thing that really jumps out to me is I can't say there's a one-for-one relationship, but I think that the thing I've always said about Nicky Ryan is that he doesn't compete enough to hit the same strides that Gordon has been able to hit, right? When Gordon was coming up, when Gordon was an early black belt, he was competing every weekend, and we just hadn't really seen that from Nicky. And I think it could be that because he's on WNO seemingly once a month, right? Mm-hmm. I think that experience is finally paying off, and it feels a little bit then unfortunate that he might be out for some time after what happened to his knee.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunate in all scenarios, but I agree that the ring rust that was so much of a factor throughout Nicky's career, for you to take a match and be gone for 6 months, 8 months, take a match, was maybe fading away. Maybe he was getting into a groove. So hopefully, as bad as it looked, he certainly was in poor shape after the match. We had to get kind of wheeled off on afterwards. So we haven't heard anything, as far as I know, about his diagnosis at the moment. I'm sure they're going to get that looked at and an MRI done as soon as possible and make some judgment calls from there. But yes, I'm really hoping that Nicky gets back quickly.
Connor, what did everybody think about this match?
Man, I think everyone's happy to see that. You know, it sucks to have someone taken out by injury, but it's nice to see a guy go out on his shield. You know, he finishes up the match and wins it in impressive fashion, first and foremost. And I think really what stands out is, you know, you take a knee injury like that, usually that, like, I'm on my butt and for the rest of the time until someone drags me off the mat. But I think Nicky was pushing the pace in the wrestling front pretty much all the way to the end. And I think the chat's super impressed because he was able to do that. You know, this isn't him wrestling up on some guy who doesn't wrestle. This is Dante Leon. So everyone is excited to see it. But hopefully when he comes back, he is still in the gym, Nicky. You know, I don't want this to be a setback because he will have to take some time.
Sure. One thing that really impressed me about the strategy of the guard pull, too, was realizing that he was injured, understanding he was up 3 points. Mm. It made it up 5 points, I think, right?
I think it was actually, I think it might have just been three, but yeah.
But he had the wherewithal to pull guard and concede a negative point mm-hmm. rather than risk being taken down directly into side control and give up four, or taken down and passed and give up, you know, four or five.
Yeah, great situational awareness from Nicky, and how to play a very conservative game. But, I mean, it's pretty obvious from where we happen to see him walk out with a severe limp, right? It was interesting, though, that some people, like you mentioned that you had looked down at that point because they are resetting, and you missed the limp. So you didn't know at that point in the match that Nicky had been hurt.
But I thought he was gassed out. I thought he was tired, and I was kind of – I was a little bit disappointed to see that he – had gassed out after 10 minutes, and then I saw him getting up limping. I was, you know, disappointed for a different reason, but sure. Also felt a little bit excited about what Nicky was able to show us and fighting through that. And if you saw, you know, I got a glimpse of the angle the knee went at, and it does not look
Mike Kolymbus got a great photo of it. Great. It's a horrible moment, but
sickening
an explicit photo.
But you can see likely where Nicky sustained the injury. He was going for that inside trip kind of takedown, and Dante seemed to be sprawling out kind of on top of the knee, bending away that it shouldn't, and that's how it goes.
Let's move on down the card. Obviously, I think maybe the most enlightening match of the event was Gio Martinez and Mikey Musumeci, right? This was the match that I think a lot of people were excited coming in for, given the implications that this has for Mikey and potentially an ADCC future.
Yeah, it was definitely my most hotly anticipated match because not only was Gio just an interesting opponent in any format, ADCC rules, and it was Mikey's debut. He had to wrestle or at least tactically get to the ground on his back in some way, and you could argue perhaps that that was strategy on Mikey's part to get taken down. It looked like a real takedown to me, but maybe he just was prepared to take that because he went straight into this incredible armbar attempt where Gio was able to fight it off. And it looked deep, but from this angle, you can see that the elbow is nearly free. It's right in that sort of no man's land, but I'm sure that was sore the next day. But there were plenty of incredible moments. Mikey had some good inside heel looks as well. But I was really impressed, I think, throughout also with Gio. Gio seemed to take some of Mikey's best shots and realize that he was not going to get the breaking power required, and that emboldened Gio to kind of push his own game. So it was a really, really fun technical bout. And, of course, we were also given a fair amount of drama after the match finished up.
Yeah, the drama, I think, has been blown up all over the place, right? And for good reason. It's not often that we see Mikey Musumeci that passionate about really anything except for jiu-jitsu.
And pizza.
Okay. So maybe he's passionate about a couple more things. But it is kind of interesting to see him fired up about very many things because I think he takes everything as serious. If he takes it seriously, he takes it very seriously.
This is a great back attack here.
Yeah.
No, that's a great point. I mean, it's a transformative moment in the sport. And, of course, we might get into this a bit more detail later. Sets up very interesting potential match in September, but I won't dive into that quite yet.
So fun to see.
The rivalry is far from over, right? This could take place again, not that long.
One thing I want to point out about this match, because it really caught my attention, is when Mikey jumped into the no-gi scene all the way back at the beginning of this year, you know, it's exciting to watch leg lock Mikey and no-gi Mikey do his thing, but I really wanted to see what his back attack game looked like, because that's always been the thing he's best at, right? He's known best for is his ability to attack his opponent's back. The Baron Bolo sequence is particularly difficult in a no-gi setting. So while I was impressed to see his leg locks, I really wanted to see exactly this, how Mikey Musumeci attacks the back of a very talented opponent.
Yeah, and it's that Matrix-style game, right? Mm-hmm. It's a great bridge between gi and no gi, and I find myself using it as well because I'm predominantly a gi player, but you avoid some of the problems of closing the distance with the Barambolo and no gi. It's hard to hold on those hips sometimes. Some guys are great at it, obviously. I'm sure Mikey can do it as well, but I do feel there's a little bit more control when you play some of that K-guard and swing the leg over. Mm-hmm. You have a better bite all the way through, plus you can transition to other things, as Mikey was doing too. So, yeah, I mean, Mikey's game is only going to get better. It's scary how much he adds in between appearances, and we know he's going to be absolutely laser-focused going into September.
Absolutely, and potentially further on than that, right? There could have been some ADCC implications in this match. I know Mikey was invited a couple of times.
That's true.
Never made it out, but this is a good argument that he deserves to be invited back again.
So I was actually happened to be sat next to Mikey and Mo when they were chatting right after the mat, and Mikey goes, Mo, please tell me this is enough for ADCC. Tell me I'm invited. And Mo goes, I can't promise it yet, but it could happen. So I think it wouldn't be shocking, especially if Mikey continues to perform in the coming months. And man, that would just be crazy to see him at 66 kilos in the world championships.
I may be wrong here, but I think Mo later got into the Discord that if you're not in, you should join. I think he later got into the Discord and confirmed that Mikey's in.
I missed that.
Someone in the Discord, give me screenshots on that before I spread the word.
Okay,
Connor, speaking of the Discord, what do they think about Mikey's ADCC performance, Mikey and ADCC in general?
Yeah, we were talking about the rivalry, and the Discord brought up a good point that it just, like, the match itself wasn't wildly close. So, you know, whenever you talk about this rivalry and about a potential matchup in September, my question is, like, okay, but what does Gio do differently to make sure, like, you know, it can't be one-sided. So we got to see something different. I don't know where you go against Mikey. I think the whole world has the question of what you do against Nogi Mikey. But I don't know. What do you guys think he does to answer?
I mean, that is a tough advice to how to beat Mikey is not my forte, let me tell you. I thought Gio did really well, to be honest. And where we saw the momentum really change was towards the end of the match when Gio was down and he went to his feet to pass, right? And I was curious when that was going to happen because Gio himself has often referred to his game as top pressure based. He's a great passer and also can use a truck to take the back and things like that. But when you get to both of your feet, you open yourself up to some entries for some leg locks and the back takes that Mikey was working. So it's hard to say, especially in a submission-only format, what to do because you want to push the pace, but if you just sit back and trade leg lock attacks, that may be the safer route to win a decision, but Gio doesn't want to do that. So I honestly have no idea what Gio needs to do, let's say, to beat someone like Mikey. It's a tough question.
You know, I think he was actually on the right path given the amount of strategy that I think went into this match. There was an explicit reason that both guys were sitting on their butt and playing leg locks for as long as they were after the points period was called, right? It's because the first person to come up was going to get swept and give up 2 points. So neither guy really wanted to come up because there's no incentive to, and there's an explicit incentive against in that you're putting the other guy in his A game and giving him an opportunity to score. Props to Gio for finally saying enough is enough and trying to do something different. But I think, you know, a good strategy might have been convince Mikey he wants to come up.
Yeah, but good luck forcing right. Mikey out of his comfort zone, sure. Right? Mikey's a very committed competitor to his strategy, so. But I would love to see it run back. You know, I think, yeah, it wasn't necessarily a razor-thin decision or anything like that. Mikey clearly had the upper hand towards the end of the match, as well as the submission attempts that aren't necessarily rewarded by advantage or anything. But I think Gio's the kind of competitor that could really take this performance and adjust his strategy and come back with something a bit different.
For sure. And strategy is a huge factor, I think, in approaching Mikey, as it was, I think, for Anna Carolina up against Liz Clay. And I've got to issue an apology. I think the entire internet was Anna Carolina an apology, right? Because we were all very much in Liz Clay's corner. Given that she was on an 11 match submission win streak, I think I can understand why so many people were counting Anna Carolina out. But Anna Carolina had the perfect strategy to beat Liz Clay.
Yeah, her positioning, Thanks, Kyle. Was absolutely incredible from the passing positions, right? She did find herself in one tight knee bar that she was able to get out of. And once that happened, we never saw her out of position again. And she was really great at negating Liz Clay's shield, right? So Liz Clay often gets a foot or at least a knee in front of her opponent and has these crazy flexible hips. Anna Carolina positioned herself in a knee cut passing style that really just completely eliminated that angle and was able to sort of grind her way through to several nice passes. I think only rewarded for one of the passes, but was able to force Liz to turtle and get into a very defensive posture. Really, really nice work. And of course, she ended the match there with that arm triangle in and a completely dominant position. But I was really impressed throughout, and I thought her strategy here of using these headlocks to try and help her get through the pass and, of course, threaten a sub. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better game plan.
Yeah, I'm curious if she's kind of written the playbook on how to address Liz Clay's guard, because the thing about Liz's guard is that she's so flexible, she's so dangerous, and she has a really unique way of setting up her leg entanglements, right? But it's dangerous enough that a lot of people don't want to really try to pass her, and even if they could, they can't. For example, Gabby Garcia couldn't pass Liz Clay's guard in a 15-minute match. Mm-hmm. She was trying, right? She had a significant size advantage. She couldn't find the way to do it. Do you think Anna Carolina might have given us some insight, given some other people in the field some insight on how to take on a guard like Liz Clay?
I mean, you have to be incredibly talented. I don't think it's a secret how to beat someone like Liz. You have to pressure in, but Liz is so good at capturing submissions from there. I mean, Anna Carolina did a great job of staying out of the leg lock danger. She, like I said, there was that one close moment. And I think if you give the advice of saying, oh, just pass like Anna did, well, you do set people up to get leg locked. I mean, sure. Anna was just very good at staying safe. But here's that moment I was talking about. This knee was fully extended. Anna had to take, a little bit of pressure before she was able to extract herself.
Ooh, that looks tight.
Yeah, and then you can see she's working her way through it. The knee's out right there. But I think this, if any piece of advice, would be to try maybe jump on the head like this, because that's no longer just perfect pressure passing, but a little more opportunistic, I think. So
yeah, right. And we're about to step into the who's number one rule set, and so, like, you know, in something that counts submissions very highly in a scoring criteria, if these guys, you know, meet again, that may be something really making sure you're latching on, so you're coming out of the pass with a submission attempt already kind of locked in for you.
Yeah, it would be interesting how this match would be different in WNO rules, right? Mm-hmm. ADCC rules put Liz, I think, directly on the offensive, being that she was immediately down a point. The moment she pulled the guard, she was down a point. She had that knee bar. She had a couple looks at heel hooks. The knee bar was by far the tightest submission she had. That arm triangle and a couple of those guillotines could have done enough to steal the show.
It would be a very tough decision under WNO format. I still think I would lean towards Anna just because of the amount of time she spent pushing the pace and dominating positionally, plus the sub attempt at the end. But yeah, I could see potentially Liz being rewarded the win in that match in some ways too under WNO. And yeah, who knows? We still haven't gotten to that division yet for the September championships, but I wouldn't be shocked if they made their way in there. Who knows? But again, a phenomenal performance there from Anna Carolina Vieira, and I'm looking forward to see Liz Clay back sometime soon as well. I'm sure she'll be back right away.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing this match happen again in the near future. There's just a lot of, obviously, girls in that division who would be great matches for Anna Carolina or for Liz. Mm-hmm. That division is just so stacked. Let's talk about the 34-0 win, Hulk versus William Tackett. I think that was obviously a great display of what Hulk does best, which is
smash.
Exactly. It was interesting to see how much pressure he was able to put on the guard of William Tackett, who's really capable of bending his way out of nearly anybody else's passing attempts.
Yeah, it was definitely very familiar and similar to the way their match played out in November at Subversive, which was sub only, so no points, but Lucas was able to pass the guard several times and kind of dominate positionally. William, for his part, is super dangerous and could always, you know, flip the script and get a submission attempt in there, but Hulk is just tactically so sound. And I think his choice of moving into north-south really, really eliminates any kind of counters. There's no buggy chokes or anything, no Hail Marys there. And Hulk has a great north-south choke that we didn't really see come into play too much. I think he fished for it a couple times. But what do you guys think? There's a lot of chatter about Hulk putting up 34 and then not really getting close to a sub. Is that a worthwhile conversation, or are people just a little salty?
I mean, he clearly played it conservative, right? He was putting himself back in Tackett's guard rather than moving forward. With that said, you have to understand that despite the fact that he might have gassed William Tackett out, despite the fact that he was clearly winning the positional battle, all William Tackett needs is one bite on the leg, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't take so much of a risk that you end up ruining a 34 to nothing lead. That, I think that looks a lot worse than winning and not attacking as much as maybe the audience wants, is blowing that lead.
Well, I would say definitely losing by submission would be worse, no doubt there. But yeah, I think you're right. I think William, of course, was also shelling up a bit towards the end, which makes it infinitely harder to get a sub. You kind of need to, and I feel like Nogi especially is harder to force the submission. You have to try and get to the back. And I don't know. It can be really tricky, and William's quite talented, right? Quite talented at defense. So
yeah, worth noting that William Tackett hasn't lost by submission yet in his black belt career. Or even before that, he got his black belt recently, right? But in his, let's call it pro career.
Pro career. There you have it. So no easy task to get someone like William to tap. And I think Hulk just played it smart. Took home the W.
Connor, what's the Discord thinking about that matchup?
Honestly, the Discord's given a lot of props to Hulk, and I think they recognize that this is just a different game than who's number one. Who's number one, like, we push that culture of shooting for submissions and always trying to finish. But, you know, what we saw at Road to ADCC was its points. So I think Hulk played a great game. Discord gets it. You know, I think everyone's big Tackett fans. It's hard to see that, you know, go down. He's still one of the best in the world. But, man, Hulk is like... his entire game is specialty built for ADCC.
Gotta ask, Becerra brings us up. I think a lot of us were very much in favor of Craig winning or picking Craig to win when that matchup was the one on the cards. Does this make Hulk look better? Does this make Hulk maybe the favorite in a matchup against Craig Jones? We still haven't seen that match, right? They've booked it three times. It's fallen apart three times, but... I think the closer we get to that match eventually happening, Hulk is looking better and better and better.
Well, the ADCC format really makes this a much closer match than I think some people who call Craig a strong favorite might factor into that, because Hulk will be given the chance to play very outside, very cagey, and maybe push... you know, he could also try to pull guard, for example, before point start and then force Craig to be on top. There's a whole lot of strategy that would factor in that match that would not be the case at something like Who's Number One. So I think Who's Number One, Craig would be a strong favorite because he is just going to be going for the sub all the time, and Hulk will have to engage, and any kind of takedowns don't matter. You know, Hulk is a positional player, and if you eliminate the reward, well, that makes it very hard, right? But I think in ADCC, Hulk, like Connor mentioned, his game is perfect for it, and Craig's is not. Craig's is not. We saw his wrestling versus Ty, and it wasn't exactly pushing Ty over the mat. There were some good exchanges there. It was one that got on the ground where Craig really kind of, I think, dominated the pacing of that match. But if you put Craig and Hulk in a wrestling match, I think Hulk wins that. So it'd be interesting to see how it played out, but I think Hulk stands a great shot under ADCC rules.
Hopefully that is a match we get to see. In either rule set, it'd be interesting. In both rule sets, it'd be great. But especially ADCC 2022, Hulk is clearly eyeing the 88 division, which is where Craig took silver. So it'd be great to see that.
I think there's a strong shot of it, absolutely.
Speaking of the 88 division, we got a kind of a maybe a catchweight. I don't know what you'd call this, but Roberto Jimenez is clearly eyeing up the 88 division. And Cade Rotolo could really be anywhere, right? 66, 70, maybe not 66, but 77 or 88, depending on where Ty goes. This, for me, was the match of the night. No questions asked. Maybe the sub of the night, too.
Yeah, we're already calling it potential match of the year. I mean, nonstop action. The first 10 minutes I felt like were just completely insane. Credit to Cade for taking this match on 4 days' notice and really making it extremely competitive. This opening armbar was so sick. I was jumping out of my chair. Roberto did a great job of defending. When I was watching it live, the arm looked a little further extended than it actually was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tight, but I think Roberto was not as much danger as my initial viewing. But really interesting throughout, and man, both guys are just so freaking good at jiu-jitsu. It's terrifying.
Really fun to see Roberto playing kind of a loose game. He can sometimes be a little bit tight depending on his opponent, maybe not open up as much as we like to see him, but he's absolutely at his best. This is a great example of it. He's at his best when he's able to just loosen up and go with the flow. Clearly, I think his jiu-jitsu matches his personality well.
Oh, the scramble is so fun, his match. And this really is a match that you should show people when you're talking about what ADCC hopes to accomplish. Right. So the points and no points periods can get kind of complicated. Some people don't know why they are there. Well, this is why. They want to give people the freedom to move openly, really, really just go for the sub, not be too concerned about positional play. That has evolved over the years into a very strategic way to make your way into the points period. But when you have two guys that are not so interested in strategy and rather just fight to the death, basically, well, you get a match like this. And it really was paid off well for the fans. Of course, we were all very, very sad that Andrew Wilty wasn't able to be there. But we were hoping that the first match would be exactly like this and just kind of set the tone for the night. And I think you couldn't have asked for a better result, or at least a better entertainment.
Right. You know, I don't want to take anything away from Cade Rotolo, obviously. Mm-hmm, he took this match on 4 days' notice. He was fighting up in weight. But I wonder how much – so his game, in my opinion, relies a lot on breaking his opponent first and then doing kind of what he wants to do. I wonder if it was a mistake to play this open against Roberto, knowing that nobody's going to break Roberto's cardio.
Not at all. I think that's his game, and he had some great looks, that armbar for one comes to mind. Some sweeps were right there. I would say Roberto was never, besides that armbar, in complete danger, but I think Cade brought the right mentality, and I think it was so wild that if you ran it back again, it could play out differently.
Right, and I said the word mistake, but I don't think it's ever really a mistake to fight like that on ADCC or Who's Number One, Matt. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who has watched the Who's Number One or the Road to ADCC show knows that that's what we want, that's what we're looking for, that's what's going to get you invited back. So 100% props to Cade. I'd love to see it. Come out and fight like that every single time. And that's the way he does, and that's why he keeps coming back.
Yeah, losing an explosive match, much cooler than winning a boring one.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
What's everybody's take on it back in the Discord?
Man, Mikey K thinks this is match of the night 100%, but, I think the bigger question is it match of the year? But honestly, so many of Cade's matches end up having that question mark around them. It's hard to, not just be biased and give it to him every time he takes the mat. but everyone's excited. I don't think anyone's joining in too much right now, but if you're not already in there, join the Discord horde, or at least throw some stuff out there, because later in this segment, I think we'll eventually be giving some shout-outs to our favorite members of the community. So join in.
Speaking of Cade Rotolo, earlier this week, we started releasing some of the names in the 155-pound division for the Who's Number One Championship on September 25th and 26th. And, man, I'm so excited to release the rest of these two names, the rest of the bracket, so that we can actually talk about this whole thing, because it's wild and we know who's coming up, but every time I see the name get announced, every time I see a new name get announced, I get chills.
It's been hard to keep this under our hats for the last 2 months, basically. I mean, the project has been in the works for over a year, but now we've narrowed down the field and we're releasing the names. The divisions are starting to take shape. And yeah, I feel like we're just really running on some serious momentum here, coming out of the Road to ADCC. And of course, today our last announcement of this afternoon was Ethan Krellenston here joining. If we read off the list, Mikey Musumeci, Cade Rotolo, Gio Martinez, Diego Pato Oliveira, Cole Abate, and of course Ethan. So I love this division. 155 is so crazy, and I think some names shock people, right? Like Colabate is definitely, as Hollywood Mike put it, nuclear bomb, right? No one expected Colabate, 16-year-old blue belt, to be jumping in to the most prestigious event of the year. And what do you guys make of that?
Yeah, you know, if you look at, you know, some of the comments on the post that we made about Cole being in the bracket, there's a lot of people that are not counting the 16-year-old blue belt out of this by any means, even if it's against Cato Rotolo, Mikey Musa. I mean, the top guys at 145, the top guys at 155, some of the top guys at 135. Doesn't matter. Cole is ranked number 10. He's a blue belt. He's a teenager. But according to the fans, the people that are tuning in to watch this, he's got every bit of a chance.
I believe it. And it's worth noting, by the way, that the rollout of these names do not correspond to a bracket. So the bracket has yet to be released yet or even finalized. So don't read too much into the list or the release dates. It's just who's in the division. And 155 is freaking crazy. So let's just throw out some dream matches, though, right? Like I could think of probably 10 different matches I'd love to see here already. But what jumped out to you? What would you want to see?
I mean, there's...
And maybe, Connor, throw it out to the Discord as well.
Yeah, I want to hear the Discord's input on this. But for me, I think the number one match that I want to watch is Cade Rotolo, Mikey Musumeci, both coming off of really exciting performances, both having, in my opinion, career years. I think Cade Rotolo is having the best year of his career, and Mikey Musumeci is really reinventing himself. So I want to see what that looks like now. They're both kind of on a collision course for me.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Mikey versus anyone on this list is a curiosity. I would love to see Colabate versus Ethan Krellenstein, to be honest. I think that's an insane matchup. It's going to be super physical. Some really exciting, I think, wrestling exchanges as well as whatever we see on the ground. And it'll be a serious test for Cole, right? Because, I mean, Ethan's one of the very best in the world. And I just don't know how it's going to play. I don't know what we would actually see in that match.
Yeah, and that matchup particularly strikes me as, you know, Ethan is a strong human being. So
yes, exactly. You know, so is Cole.
Yeah.
You look at Cole a year ago, and, you know, of course he's 16. That's what happens, right? But, yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Watching, I think we'll get to see how Cole does against a grown man, because I think as far as that division goes, Ethan is probably the best definition of like man strength, right? He's really
seriously strong. Yeah. I can confirm this. Yes.
Connor, what's going on in Discord chat? How does everybody feel? I want to hear some maybe favorite potential matchups.
Man, everyone's excited about Mikey versus pretty much anybody.
Yep.
You know, Mikey versus Ethan was the first one our boy O Steve pointed out, which I'm a big fan of that one. Mikey versus anyone that physically tries to take the match over, I'm about. We also got Cade Mikey, and I think that's a very similar seeing Cade try and wrap up some Darces or whatnot, trying to pass Mikey's guard would be so fun. There's some people that think Ethan versus Cole wouldn't turn out so well. Yeah, I know. I mean, we got everything. We got Cole versus Gio. We got Ethan versus Cade. I'm excited about it. I think the Who's Number One Discord chat thinks this is going to be one of the bigger events we've probably ever seen.
You know, that's a really good point. Would love to see that Ethan versus Cade rubber match. I guess it's not really a rubber match, right? Cade won both, but
they're very close rematches. Yeah, right. And Ethan, of course, wants that one back. Wants both of them back.
Sure.
You got Gio Martinez versus anybody. I think people may be sleeping on Pato a little bit. Pato, of course, won Nogi Pan, submitting everyone along the way, including some super high-level grapplers like Josh Cisneros.
Savage knee bar.
I think he's going to turn some heads, maybe shock some people. So it's already, just with these six names, really shaping up.
Really important to note, too, the format of this event, right? It's not a single elimination. So if you lose in the first round, you move on. There's a consolation bracket. So every one of these athletes who wants it, and if they're on this card, I imagine they all want it, has a chance to wrestle their way back to third place.
Yeah, and it's a true third place. So that's going to create some really spicy matchups as well. Let's not forget it's going to be held over 2 days. You know, the opening round in the morning on Saturday. We have the semifinals in that Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. Sunday kicks off with the consolation bracket and then leads us to the finals. So
the, in my opinion, the biggest event in grappling history probably ever. I mean, at least up there with maybe another event or two, but biggest prize money ever, right? $250,000 given away across five divisions. We're going to be releasing the rest of the divisions after this week. This week is 155. Next week, we're talking about the women's 115, which in my opinion, maybe the best division in this entire thing.
It's super spicy. You guys are going to lose your minds when some of the names come out. And yeah, I was very happy to be putting up some serious cash for the winners here. $40,000 to the champ, and then second and third also get some money. So it's going to change the game. And yeah. I'm really, really excited to, like I said, finally be rolling out the names. We've been sitting on these names for a little while. And it's like, oh my God, let's just get to it. Let's go, let's go. So this is a focus now. This is what we're up to.
So just one more quick run through. 55 this week, 115 next week. Then we'll do men's 185. We got the women's heavyweight after that, and the men's heavyweight will be the final one to go. We got lots of cool content coming out with some of these athletes. That's where Mike and Reed are right now.
Yep, they're out there in Vegas and going to California, meeting with some of the athletes that are on the show. And you'll be seeing all that stuff pop up on the site and app very soon.
Let's talk Discord Horde real quick. Anybody need a shout out?
Yeah, shout out to Shoya Roll and Heel Hooks. He's in there. He got quad gold at IBJJF Chicago Open. Nice. I don't know how you get quad gold, but apparently he's a freaking killer.
Wait, an absolute gi and no gi, buddy.
That's yeah, loud. Well, oh yeah, I forgot. I guess that would be gi and no gi. Okay, mm-hmm, that makes more sense. Yeah, and we had DK BJJ. He came into town for the Gordon Ryan seminar. I'm not sure if he was over at the Road to 80cc event, but he got to join and hang out with everyone. Make sure if you guys are in town, like whether you're part of Discord or just the YouTube chat, and you end up coming to one of these events, come find us. Say what's up. You know, we'd love to give you guys a shout out. So
we got one going out to Judo Bruno Regan. Finally got his purple belt after winning Pans at blue belt back last year.
That's right. That's right. Absolute champ, so, right?
Yeah, big man. He's what's he say, 6'3", 350. But he moves like a small man. He moves like a middleweight.
Yeah.
And he has no problems with throwing you, no matter who you are. I have seen him toss around pretty much everyone.
What tipped you off on that, Judo Bruno? But yeah, he's something to watch for sure, and kind of shake things up there, purple belt. Yeah.
Guys, anything else going on before we wrap this up?
I don't really think so. I think we got just a little bit of content to tease, because we got some big stuff going on tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow, the DDS in Puerto Rico episode 3, that comes out live on the site at, what time is it, noon?
Yes, let's go, yes.
Dropping it at, I think, noon, yep. So we'll roll out on this, but take a look at the trailer.
What are we doing right now, Nikki?
We have a little beach wrestling tournament.
Is this it? Come on.
You got us in the car almost crashing like 6 times. So
dude,
that'll be
I
good.
Felt like...
So,
Nikki, how's my driving?
It's awful.
You know, we don't really chit-chat around, so it's 45 minutes in and out, hard training.
100 reps should not take more than 2 minutes.
Just cries of pain and agony in the trailer. I'm excited. This could be awesome. Comes up tomorrow.
Yeah, so, and that'll be noon Eastern time, and we'll do 11 a.m. Central time.
Tune in for that. We'll be back next week. We can talk about the rest of these two guys. We'll be announcing them tomorrow, the rest of the division, and we'll be able to start talking about the women's 115. Guys, tune in next week. Corey Stockton.